Again, I highly recommend at least take a look at it. It's a very, people have told me already, it's a very easy read, but it deals with the yesodos of emunah, of bitachon, and particularly as they apply to going out. And I think you'll find some chedushim, because I believe that most people, certainly most people that I speak to, have got some very, very strange approaches to going out. And I believe a lot of trouble that people get into in trying to find their Basharit and trying to keep him or after stem from some pretty, again, some pretty silly ideas of what we're supposed to be doing. So again, please take a look in the back when you get a chance. Gemara Brachos tells us that when Rabbi Elazar was sick, Rabbi Yochanan went to visit him. And Rabbi Yochanan entered into this room, and Rabbi Yochanan saw that it was dark, and he got closer to Rabbi Elazar, and he saw that Rabbi Elazar was crying. And Rabbi Yochanan said to Rabbi Elazar, "Neimata bocha, why are you crying? If you're crying because you're ill now and you can't learn as much Torah as you would like, echad amarbe ve'echad amamis, if you learn a little, if you learn a lot, as long as you're doing as much as you can, Hashem understands. If you're crying because you don't have parnasa, not everyone is zochet to shtei shulchanos, not everyone who becomes a Talmud Chacham is zochet to have his physical needs in this world met. And if you're crying because you don't have children," at which point Rabbi Yochanan pulls out from his jacket a sudur, a handkerchief, unravels it, and says, "This is the bone of my 10th son." Gemara explains to us that Rabbi Yochanan lost 10 sons. This was the bone of his 10th son. At which point, Rabbi Elazar said, "That's not why I'm crying." Rabbi Yochanan said, "Why are you crying?" And he said, "Because of your beauty. Because your beauty will be in the ground and will be eaten, and it will not return anymore." The Rishonim explained to us that Rabbi Yochanan was one of the beautiful people of Yerushalayim. In those days, people born in Yerushalayim of great spiritual level also had a beautiful toar, had a beautiful facial appearance, and this was right around the Churban Bayis, and this was to be the last generation of beautiful people born in Yerushalayim. Says Rabbi Elazar, "That's why I'm crying, because you are the last of that generation." Says Rabbi Yochanan to Rabbi Elazar, "In that case, your crying is appropriate and proper," and they cried together. After a little while, Rabbi Yochanan says to Rabbi Elazar, "Are you happy with these yesurin, these pains that you have, this illness? Are you happy with them?" Says Rabbi Elazar, "Lo hein velo scharan, I don't wish for them nor for their reward." At which point, Rabbi Yochanan took his hand, cured him, and Rabbi Elazar was well. And that's Gemara. And I think there's a lot to think about in this Gemara, but let's start with the obvious question. The obvious question is, what in the world was Rabbi Yochanan doing carrying around the bone of his son? And the Marsha explains why he carried around the bone of his son. Says the Marsha, two explanations, and the second one, and check me up, because you won't believe me until you see it inside, but these are the words of the Marsha. Because it was so beloved, so precious to Rabbi Yochanan, the suffering that he suffered, he carried around the bone of his son as kind of a memento, sort of a way of remembering the pain, the suffering, because that pain and suffering was so chaviv, so precious to him. And that Marsha is very, very difficult to understand. And if you like to fully understand why it's so difficult, the Ran explains to us how his 10th son died, and how, in fact, Rabbi Yochanan ended up with the bone. There was this large vat, a cauldron that was boiling and bubbling. Somehow his last son fell into this cauldron. The bone was the last remaining fragment of his son. And he put that bone into a sudur, into a handkerchief, and he carried around with him. Again, says the Marsha, why? Because it was so chaviv to him, so precious to him, so beloved to him, the pain that he suffered. And the question is rather obvious. What's pshat? Rabbi Yochanan wasn't a masochist. He was a very, very wholesome, great individual. How is it possible that he so much appreciated, so much loved the suffering that he literally carried around the bone of his son. What's Pshat in his Gemara? And to understand Pshat in his Gemara, I'd like to focus on a very real question. And that is, why does Hashem bring suffering? Hashem is a Meitiv. Hashem is kindly, giving, magnanimous. Hashem created the entire world to give. And Hashem loves us more than any human being we could ever imagine. The Chovos Levavos says, take the most kindly, merciful, loving person you've ever dreamt of. Take that mercy and love and multiply it by 10,000 times. You won't begin to even estimate the love that Hashem has for every one of his creations. Hashem is the Meitiv, the ultimate giver, and everything that Hashem does is for the best. So the question that a person should ask is, why is there suffering? Why is there pain? But that question requires very clear understanding. The question is, why does Hashem bring pain? Why does Hashem bring suffering? Meaning to say, don't ask the question, if you smash your fist into the wall and say, ow, Hashem, why me? That's a foolish question. Hashem gave you Bechira. Hashem gave you the ability to hurt yourself. And if you smash your fist into the wall, don't go blaming Hashem. And what I mean by that is, a lot of times we fall prey to blaming Hashem for our problems. A guy has a temper, and I mean a fierce temper, and he opens his mouth day after day with words and expressions that literally make your hair stand on end. And eventually his wife leaves him. She can't stand it anymore. And he says, Hashem, why me? Hashem, why'd you choose me? Hashem didn't choose you. Hashem didn't bring that suffering to you. You caused that pain. Don't go blaming God for your mistakes. What I'm referring to is when Hashem brings the situation to you, when it was clearly orchestrated and clearly brought to you, not because you were negligent, not because you were careless. You were walking down the street and suddenly a branch fell. There was nothing you could have done about it. I had a menahel when I was in eighth grade, a very pure man. I considered him a very holy Jew. He was buying a lulav and esrog, and he was putting the lulav and esrog into his trunk. Another car came from behind, smashed his legs between the two bumpers. He was not negligent. He was not careless. That was brought me Eis Hashem. And that's when we have to ask, what's Pshat? Why did Hashem do that? And why would Hashem bring suffering and pain to a Jew? And I believe that there are four reasons why Hashem will bring pain, why Hashem will bring suffering. The first reason is because oftentimes pain and suffering will change a person's course in life. Sometimes it is that we're headed in the wrong way. We're headed in a direction that's not only not good for us, but is very, very damaging. Whether it's because we're making a lot of money and we get caught up in the trivial things of the world, whether because we're treated with a lot of honor and we start getting a little heady and a little full of ourselves. There are many, many times when you can clearly see that Hashem brings pain and suffering to a person to correct their life course. I was recently in Otisville, and I visited a young man there who didn't belong there. And let me say these words carefully. There are many people who belong there and shouldn't be in a minimum security federal penitentiary, should be in a maximum security federal penitentiary. But this young man didn't belong there. I know the story very well, and it's one of the ultimate classic frame-ups. But I don't mean that people framed him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu framed him. You could see Hashem orchestrating the events, and if I would share with you some of the details, you would say it's astonishing. It sounds like a Purim spiel. It was written, clearly scripted. I don't believe he's happy to be there, but I do believe he will come out a vastly different person. You see, when you have time to think, when you have a lot of time to think and dwell and understand, you take a different attitude. You look at your family differently. You look at priorities differently. You look at life differently. And if you'd ask him today, is he happy to be there? But if you ask him 5 years from now or 10 years from now, I believe it's probably the greatest thing that ever happened to him, because he will be on a different course in life. And every once in a while, you see a situation where HaKadosh Baruch Hu clearly orchestrated, brought about events to bring a person to a different course in life. Change direction, move them over. It's not pleasant while you're going through it, but 5 years later, 10 years later, you recognize a tremendous chesed. And that's one of the reasons why Hashem will bring suffering to a person, to change their direction in life. There's a second reason. The second reason Hashem will bring pain and suffering to a person is because pain and suffering deepens a person's mindset. It changes your whole attitude. We become very, very frivolous. We become very, very caught up in the world, earning a living or doing whatever we're doing. We become so busy that we forget why we're living. When a person suffers pain, when a person suffers through events, they have a different attitude, a different frame of mind. They think more deeply. They approach things with a very, very different mindset. I'll give you an example. I know a 9-year-old girl who lost her father. And at the tender age of 9, she became the second mother. She was the oldest of her siblings, and she was brought up in a very different lifestyle than most children her age. And she became a phenomenal human being. Very caring, very giving, very mature, but she could never become who she became unless she went through the circumstances. Is it kind? Is it wonderful? Do we wish it upon anyone? That's not our job. But Hashem has a much deeper understanding, and Hashem will bring pain and suffering because it changes a person's attitude, it gives them more depth, more understanding, it gives them a different perspective in life. And that's the second reason. The first is to change a life course. The second is to give a person more depth and understanding. But there's a third reason why Hashem will bring suffering and pain to a person. And to understand the third reason, I'd like to focus on the opposite. The Rishonim tell us that when you see a rush of a tovlo, you see a man who's wicked, who has it very good, he's making a fortune of money, he's given tremendous honor, he has a great life. The Rishonim tell us, no one understands that you're looking at a klala. You're looking at a man who's cursed because he's eating up his olam haba in this world. It will happen from time to time, and if it could be, Hashem feels an obligation to pay back a person for what he's done. A person may have done something good in his life, may have done something appropriate, and Hashem doesn't want him around in the world to come, because he's not worthy to be there. But on some level, Hashem Kaviyachol feels an obligation to pay him back, so Hashem gives him his reward in this world, and he gets luxuries and fancy homes and lots of honor and wonderful, and we look at him and go, what's pshat? Chazal tell us pshat is you're looking at a cursed man, a man who's eating up his world to come in such a transient, passing manner. And the third reason why Hashem brings pain and suffering is because pain and suffering is mechaper. I don't care who you are, I don't care how great you are, you likely have done things wrong. And for us to have to leave this earth and endure for eternity a sully mark, a part of me that's imperfect, would be a travesty. And Hashem with tremendous rachamim, with tremendous love and mercy says, I'll pay you back in this world. This world is so quick and so passing. Yes, it's painful. Yes, it means enduring. But you're done. It's over. And then for eternity, you get to enjoy. There's an expression that I've read many times. Concentration camp inmates would often say, a day is so long, but the weeks and the months pass so quickly. You read about people who live through concentration camps, and they describe the pain, the day-to-day pain was so prevalent, just so profound, that the days seemed to last forever, but the weeks and the months just passed quickly. And if you think back on suffering that you've endured, things that you've gone through, b'shas maisa, at the time, it lasted a long time, but you look back and you see it was but a moment. It's gone and it's history. To be able to leave this world clean, to be able to leave this world without blemishes, without various packages, is a tremendous chesed. And the third reason why Hashem will bring pain and suffering is because it's mechaper. It cleans us up. gets rid of things that we've done wrong. It's a payback in a very cheap, passing currency, so that for eternity we get to enjoy forever what we've accomplished without blemishes. The first reason is a life correction. Second reason is to deepen a person. The third reason is because it's mechaper, it atones. And then there's a fourth reason. And the fourth reason is very rare. The fourth reason is something called Yisurim Shel Ahava. Yisurim Shel Ahava means you don't deserve it. It's not a payback. It's not to deepen you. It's not to correct your life course. But by enduring this, you're going to gain schar in the world to come that's unimaginable and beyond our perception. This is something that it's very rare. The average common person doesn't get it. So from time to time, you read about tzaddikim who did receive such situations, but that's the fourth reason. But here's the point. Every one of them is for our benefit. Every situation, every time I smash my foot, every time I trip and break something, every time that I'm feeling pain or suffering, the first thing I have to think about and understand is that it's for my good. Hashem does it with rachamim, with love, with kindness and mercy. So with that as a background, it should be simple. Pain and suffering should be a cakewalk. What's the big deal? I just put my brain on and say Hashem loves me, Hashem is doing this for my good, and it should be simple. But it's not. And I'll explain to you why it's not simple. You know what the difference between a philosophical question and an asoyan is? I'll share with you what the difference is. A philosophical question is when you break your leg. Hashem, I don't understand. He's such a good guy. He's in the hospital now for 6 weeks. Hashem, why? Why'd you do that? I don't understand it. That's a philosophical question. What's an asoyan? An asoyan is when I smash my toe. Ow! You see, when I'm looking at your situation, I could be dispassionate. I could be objective, and I could weigh the pros and the cons, ask Hashem why, and I can understand it's for your good. But when I'm in pain, it's a very different situation. No longer is it a philosophical question. Now it's an asoyan. Now it's difficult because now it's me, and the pain covers up my entire seichel, my entire wisdom, blocks my vision, and totally encompasses my field of vision. And that's why philosophy is very easy and the shonos are very difficult. And if you'd like to really work on this, the way to work on it is not intellectually. It's not just understanding it. It's in the thick and thin in life, in the situations in life, when you're enduring, when you're suffering, that's when the real work comes in. And I'd like to share with you two steps that are imperative. If you'd like to work on this, there are two steps that are vital for your success in actually winning this nesayon. The first step is something that the Sefer HaChinuch explains to us. He says, the Ramban counts as a mitzvah sasei doraisa tefillah. But the Ramban counts tefillah as an obligation in a different way than we normally think. Says the Ramban, there is no obligation upon a Jew to daven daily. Not midoraisa, that's the Darabanan. The obligation of a Jew to daven is when you're in tsar, when you're in pain, you're obligated to reach out to Hashem and ask Hashem to have mercy. Says Ramban, that's the obligation of tefillah, and that's the only time you chayav midiraisa. And then the Chinuch says something very interesting. He says, and if you're in pain, if you're suffering, and you don't daven, not only are you mevatel the asay, not only didn't you fulfill the asay, he says more than that, whom kemesir hashkachas Hashem me'elov. It's like you're removing Hashem's hashkacha. It's like you're saying Hashem doesn't run the world. Hashem's not involved in your life. Hashem is not in charge of the outcomes. If you're in pain and you're in trouble and you don't call out to Hashem, not only aren't you fulfilling the mitzvah say, you're denying Hashem's involvement in your life. That's how the Chinuch explains this Ramban. And I'd like to ask you what I consider an obvious question on the that Chinuch. Who says it's true? Let's say I'm in pain. I broke my leg and I don't daven. I'm in trouble and I don't ask Hashem for help. Maybe it's quite simple. Maybe I don't understand the power of tefillah. Maybe I feel I'm not worthy to daven. Maybe I feel Hashem doesn't care about me enough. There might be many reasons why I don't daven. How could the Chinuch say that if you don't daven when you're in trouble, you're saying Hashem is not involved in your life, Hashem doesn't run the world? It's not true. Maybe I do understand Hashem is orchestrating these events, but I don't believe in the power of tefillah, or I don't believe Hashem is going to take care of me. There are many reasons. Would you like to know the answer to that question? Imagine you're climbing a ladder, and you're on the very top of the ladder, and you're reaching for something, and the ladder starts to... I don't care who's at the base of the ladder. I don't care if you know the fellow or you don't. You cry out, "Help! Grab the ladder! I'm going to fall!" Why? Because you're in trouble and there's someone there who can save you, whether you know him or you don't know him, whether he's a Rachman or not a merciful person. You're going to call out because that's instinctual. Says the Sefer Chinuch, if we understood that Hashem is present, if I really got that one single cognition clearly, of course I'd cry out, "Hashem, help, please." Whether I understood the power of tefillah or not, whether I felt I was worthy or not, I would call out, "Hashem, help me, please, because I'm in trouble." And says the Sefer Chinuch, if you don't call out, if you don't beg for mercy, what that means is you don't see Hashem there. And I believe the first thing when it comes to dealing with suffering is that most often we make a mistake. Keili, keili, lama zavtani, Hashem, why did you leave me? Why did you abandon me? Why did these things happen to me? Why weren't you there watching me? My friends, I'd like to share with you, that is half apikarsis. Hashem did not abandon you. Hashem didn't allow these things to happen to you. Hashem brought that pain directly to you. Hashem brought you to that situation, orchestrated the events, and brought every single ounce of the pain directly to you. Hashem didn't sit back and watch it happen. Hashem runs the world. And the first problem that we have dealing with pain and suffering is we have this attitude of Hashem wasn't watching me. Hashem wasn't guarding me. That sheker v'kozev. Hashem was watching. Hashem was guarding. But it's a lot deeper than that. Hashem brought this to me. Emuna 101 says that nothing happens on the planet. No activity, no occurrence happens without Hashem's direct involvement in it. And when I'm suffering pain, when I'm in trouble, when I'm really, really in a difficult situation, the first thing I have to ask is, why did Hashem bring me to this? I see Hashem. I see Hashem right there. I recognize it's Hashem. And once I recognize that it's Hashem, then I ask the first significant question, why? And that's very, very significant, because once you see Hashem there, and then you ask the why, you say to yourself as follows, I know Hashem is merciful. I know Hashem loves me. I know that everything that Hashem does is for my good, is for my best. Why did Hashem bring this to me? And it's very interesting, because the Gemara in Brachos tells us, when Yisurim come to a person, Yifash Besh B'maisav, he should look into his actions. And Rashi explains what that means. He has to look and ask himself, what brought this to me? What avera, what situation? And most likely you'll figure it out. Most likely you'll understand why you were brought to that situation, why Hashem brought this to you, and most likely you'll be able to understand the chesed shebo. Not always, not every situation. Sometimes the pain is just too great. But I'm willing to bet you that if you look at other people, you'll hit it most of the time for sure. You see, again, when you move out of the self-judgment and look at other people's lives, it's very easy to see why this is for his betterment and this is for his good. And when you get good at that, then get good at practicing it on yourself. And the minute you feel Yisurin coming upon you, that's the first thing you're supposed to say. I see Hashem is bringing this to me. I see Hashem is orchestrating. Why is this happening? And when you get good at that, you end up with a very different perspective on life. And I'd like to share with you a mushal. If you really work on this and really practice this, would you like to know what your level of bitachon will be like? Imagine the following. Imagine a young girl walking with her mother to the second chemotherapy session. She takes her mother's hand and she walks with her mother patiently and willingly. Now, this little girl's been there before. She knows what's going to happen. She knows what it means to be nauseous and throw up for a week straight. She knows what it means to pull out clumps of her hair as she brushes her hair. And for the life of her, she doesn't understand why this chemotherapy is for her good, but she takes her mother's hand and walks with her mother because she knows that her mother loves her. Mommy knows better than I what's for my good, and this little girl trusts her mother and walks with a total equanimity, total bitachon. And if a Jew practices seeing Hashem on a regular basis, and if a Jew practices the next step, asking the why, and works on putting away my own pain and trying to understand, you get to a level, you get to a perspective where you're able to trust Hashem and say the words, I may not understand the why. I may not fully understand why it's my good, but Hashem loves me. I trust Hashem. Hashem is bringing this for my best. And that's level one. But interestingly enough, there's a higher madrega. There's a higher level that we, you and I, may not get to, but every once in a while there were people who attained. And if you'd like to understand that higher level, I'd like to share with you a mushel. Imagine Moshe, a five-year-old boy. Moshe has a very, very wealthy Zaidi, and I mean very wealthy. It's Hanukkah, and Moshe's in his room, and his Zaidi comes in, and Moshe's playing with his piggy bank, and Zaidi says, Moshe, what do you have there? And Moshe says, well, Zaidi, this is my penny collection. You want to see? And Moshe pulls out one shiny penny and another one. Zaidi, this is my favorite. This is the shiniest one. And another. And he lays out his five shiny pennies, his five favorites. Zaidi says, Moshe, that's very nice. And Zaidi pulls out his wallet. And Zaidi pulls out a $1,000 bill and says, here, Moshe, let me take this one. And he puts a $1,000 bill down. And he takes a second penny and puts another $1,000 bill, and a third, and a fourth. He takes five of Moshe's favorite pennies and leaves them 5,000 crisp bills. And Zaidi leaves, walks out. 20 minutes later, it's time for the meal, and Moshe's mother can't find Moshe anywhere. She goes up to his room, and she finds Moshe in the room, and Moshe's crying. Moshe, what's the matter? Why are you crying? Zaidi took my pennies. He took my shiny pennies. The Archa Sadikim explains, if we had emunah, if we really had an understanding of Hashem's love and Hashem's chesed, we'd understand that any ounce of pain that we feel is the greatest chesed. He says it's literally like trading copper coins for gold bars. Yes, it hurts. And the more that it hurts, the more that I have to say to myself, wow, Hashem loves me. Could you imagine what's awaiting for me? Could you imagine what's coming and what Hashem has in store for me? If Hashem loves me more than I could ever imagine or envision, and Hashem wants me to endure this, wow, the schar, the reward must be astonishing, like trading pennies for $1,000 bills. My friends, I don't know if we'll ever get to that madrega. But once upon a time, there were Jews who did. And if you'd like to understand pshat in Rabbi Yochanan, I believe that's exactly the pshat. Did Rabbi Yochanan love his children? He loved them dearly. Did he suffer pain, tremendous pain? But whilst he was suffering that tremendous, unimaginable pain, he said to himself, Hashem loves me. And Hashem is bringing this to me. And if Hashem is bringing this to me, it must be astonishing. The reward in the world to come must be so phenomenal, so tremendous, that those Yisurim were chaviv, were precious to him. And when Rabbi Yochanan carried around the bone of his 10th son, believe me, his son was beloved. And believe me, the pain was real. But the fact that the pain was real, and the fact that he saw Hashem brought him that pain, and the fact that he knew how much Hashem loved him, let him feel a sense of chavivus, of loving that pain. Why? Because he understood the calculation. It's trading pennies for $1,000 bills, copper coins for gold bars, because he transcended physicality. He wasn't caught up in the world. He wasn't lost in Olam Hazeh. He understood that he was Ben Olam Haba. And my friends, that is a level that I don't know if we'll ever attain, but it's eye-opening to hear. When you read about tzaddikim, when you read about tremendous gedolei olam who endured suffering, but they didn't just endure it with a simcha, the why is because they understood something that we don't understand. You see, most of the time when we say the words, I guess it's for the best, Gamzul Tova, it's with this grimace. It's like, drat, or Gamzul Tova. Oh. What that means in plain language is drat. Ooh, this is a bad thing that happened to me, but Gamzul Tova, I guess somehow, some way, I can't even figure out how, it's for my best. And that's okay. I guess it's a first step. But if you'd like to understand the way the game's supposed to be played, it's with emunah. Emunah means, I get it. It's for my best. Wow, Baruch Hashem. I see the Hashkacha. I see Hashem guiding my day. I see Hashem guiding the situation. This failed. And it didn't just fail. It failed miserably. And I see the clear hand of Hashem making it fail. So what's my conclusion? Maybe Hashem knows better than I what I need. Maybe Hashem knows better than I what's for my best. This looks so good for me. It looked like something would be so wonderful. I guess Hashem has a better understanding. And the more you train yourself to see Hashem involved, the more you train yourself to recognize the chesed Hashem, and the more you train yourself to understand how passing and frivolous this world is, the more you have a sense of, wow, Baruch Hashem, I failed again. Wow, I failed! Wow! And I mean that. And I don't mean because you were lazy. And I don't mean because you didn't try. I mean, you really put your full energy in. You really put your full effort in. And you failed. Not because you were lazy. And folks, I've been there. If I had a dollar for every time I failed, I'd be doing okay. And I wish I could say every time I failed, it was like, wow, Baruch Hashem. But that's the attitude we're supposed to have. If I put in my best effort and I was wise and prudent and I really put forth a concentrated, clear effort and it didn't succeed, I'm supposed to say the words, I guess Hashem knows better than I. Hashem has a better plan than I. And I have a sense of happiness, of joy. When you fail, it's not as difficult. It's when you suffer pain and when you're living through difficult situations that it's much more difficult, because pain has a way of just blinding us, has a way of just capturing our emotions, and we become bitter and it becomes difficult. And that's why it's a nisayon. But the solution to the nisayon, the first step is to recognize it's literally Hashem bringing this. And the next step is to ask myself why. And when I start asking the why and I start asking and asking, if I'm honest, most of the time I can see it. And even if I can't see it directly, I trust Hashem. I know Hashem has my best interest in mind, whether I could see it in this world or next world. That's called bitachon, that's called emunah. Okay, now that is an introduction. I'd like to share with you an interesting observation. For many years now, I've said the following half seriously. I've half seriously said that I'm jealous of alcoholics. And I'll share with you why I say that. I've read through the Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book. This is now my third time through. And every time I read through it, I'm astonished by the first step and the third step of the solution. The first step of a person dealing with alcoholism or any addiction in a serious way is a recognition that I am powerless. I cannot control this activity. I've read story after story where a man describes that he knew clearly that if he took another drink, likely he would die, and he couldn't not take the next drink. And when he reached that conclusion that I am utterly, totally powerless over this, he's ready to say the words, I can't do it. I trust in my higher power, Hashem. I take my heavy load and I say, I can't do it. Hashem, I rely on you. I trust in you. I can't do it. And every time I read these stories, one after another, you see a person really, really getting it. I'm powerless. I cannot control my destiny. I cannot control my future. I recognize that I can't do it, and there's a shifting. I recognize that it's God. I trust in Hashem. I can't do it. I rely on you. And the reason why I say it only half in jest, but I sort of mean it, the reason why I'm jealous is because that is real emunah. That's really getting it. That's really understanding it. And I hate to say it, but I don't think it's that common, And I don't think that that's the way we daven, and I don't think that that's the way we really trust. Would you like a mushel to the way I think we normally daven? Imagine the following. Imagine a guy has an appointment downtown Manhattan, major client, 2:30 is the appointment, he leaves his house early because he's got to be there on time because this is a make it, break it client for his entire company. He sets out early enough, and lo and behold, there's traffic on the GW. Oh my goodness, bumper to bumper. Oh, he's sweating. He barely gets off. It's 2 o'clock by the time he gets off the GW. And as he's coming down Manhattan, it's stuck bumper to bumper. He gets to Midtown Manhattan at 2:25, and he's sweating bullets. This client is waiting. This guy is impatient. And it's 2:25. The appointment is 2:30. Oh my goodness. He heads right to the first parking garage, and he sees the words, full. Oh! He drives around the block, finds another garage, full. Oh! Another one, full. Oh my goodness, it's 2:35. Hashem Hirachem, Hashem help! He drives around the block frantically looking for a spot, nothing. Another block, nothing. Hashem, please help! It's 2:40. Hashem, I promise I'll learn an hour a week. Please, Hashem, have rachmanis, please. He drives around the block again, and again, and again. It's 2:45. Hashem, I promise I'll learn an hour a day. I'll learn enough of Yomi, please, anything. Suddenly, a beam of light shines on a spot right on the side of the street, and it's empty. Oh my goodness, there's no car there. He's about to pull in. Before he pulls in, he looks heavenwards and he says, Hashem, deal's off. I found one on my own. Thank you. Anyway, and he pulls into the spot. Mashallah maha davadomer. I hate to admit this, folks, but I've been there. There have been many a times when I daven and Hashem, I said, I can't do it. Hashem, I need help with the parnasa. Hashem, I need help with my kids. I can't do it. And then I get a job and I start doing well. And I start making some money. And then it's like, you know, Hashem, it's okay. I found the spot myself now. I don't need your help anymore. It's okay. Deal's off. And if you think I'm kidding, think about it. How many times we find a situation where I recognize I can't do it. And then suddenly things turn around. And it's like, Hashem, I don't really need your help anymore. Probably not even then, you know. I could take care of it myself. And that is a very real problem because we have the sense of independence, we have the sense of control, and I guess on one level it's healthy and we should be very driven and very take charge, and at the same time we have to recognize that everything is Eis Hashem, and there's nothing that I control, every outcome is completely determined by Hashem. And unfortunately we don't get that, but an alcoholic, when he recognizes that time after time after time he's fallen, and he's gotten drunk again, and he's in this gutter again, and he gets up and he says, I can't do it. I'm totally, completely dependent upon you. That's a real transference. That's real emunah. I'm not advocating becoming an addict, believe me. But I am advocating understanding what it means to see Hashem involved in our lives, what it means to see Hashem right there. And it requires, oftentimes, breaking out of the rote. We become very busy, become very involved, and we mouth words. It's Ashkacha, it's Hashem, and we don't even know what we're saying. We just mouth the words. When you have a rough situation, whether you need something or you're suffering or you're in pain, that's the time to say, stop. Why is this happening? I will not allow this just to pass. I won't allow this to be another one of those busy things in life, in the heavy traffic of life that I'm not going to think about. This hurts me. I'm suffering. Why is this happening to me? And the first step is to see the Yad Hashem. I get it. Hashem brought this. I see that Hashem orchestrated it. Hashem didn't sit back and let it happen. Hashem brought me to the situation and brought the pain to me. That's step one. And then step two. Why? If Hashem is kind, if Hashem is loving, if Hashem loves me more than I could ever imagine, if Hashem cares for me more than I care for me, why is Hashem doing this? And that's when you begin stepping away from the busyness of life and you begin thinking about life differently. And if you're honest and you're able to do that, you recognize the reasons behind it and you begin to develop a very different relationship with Hashem. Rabbi Yochanan felt a constant love, a constant involvement of Hashem in his life, but not just involvement, a constant sense of concern. And as he felt the pain, and the more that he felt the pain, the more that he recognized the love, because why is Hashem doing this to me? Why is Hashem bringing this to me? Hashem's not vengeful. Hashem's not angry. Hashem can't get angry. The midah doesn't exist by Hashem. Hashem acts b'charon af for our good. But Hashem is loving and kindly, and Hashem does everything that he does for our good. Why is Hashem doing this? And again, every once in a while you read about people like Rabbi Yochanan who reached the level that despite the fact that they lived through Gehenim, not to lose a son, to lose 10 sons, and they were gedolei olam, they were great individuals, and to lose one after another, and the final one, to watch his flesh being eaten off his bones in a cauldron boiling, and then to take out that last bone, to suffer such pain and to suffer such a loss, and for that pain itself to be chaviv, beloved, shows us a man who's transcended the physical world, shows us a man who got it, who saw Hashem active in his life, who understood the chesed of Hashem. This was a man who lived physically in our world, but really was in a different world. We'll never get there. It's eye-opening to hear about it, eye-opening to read about it, because it changes our perspective. But halavai, we get to the first level. The first level is to see Hashem and to ask the why and to recognize that while I may not know the answer, I know that Hashem loves me, I know it's my good, and I walk like that little girl holding her mommy's hand, walking to the chemotherapy. Why? I don't understand, but I know my mother loves me and it's for my good. A person works on this, they grow, they accomplish, they become a vastly different person. I'd like to close with one last story. The story is told that in the time of the Vilna Gaon, there was a Ger Tzedek who was of Polish nobility. Now, the church did not take kindly to the idea of Gentiles becoming Jews. As a matter of fact, it was not just an affront, it was a major, major rebellion, because keep in mind the fact that for close to 1,500 years, the church was saying that they replaced the Jews. Anytime you read in the Old Testament, Yisrael, what the church says is that is now the church. You see, God had a covenant with the Jews. The Jews were rebellious. God broke that covenant. And the new Yisrael is the church. And that's how they read the Old Testament. Now, needless to say, anytime that Jews are successful, and anytime it's clear that Hashem still takes care of his people and still loves his people, it's a bone in the throat of the church. And for a man of Polish nobility, for a man of royalty, to leave the Gentile fold and become a Jew was such an affront to the church that they did everything in their power to hunt him out. He was, again, of royal lineage, and it was a tremendous affront, and they chased him and they chased him. Now, apparently, I don't know if the Gra ever met him, but apparently the Gra knew that he was a real Ger Tzedek. Eventually, this man was captured, and they began torturing him. And the Gra sent a message. The message that he sent was, if you want, I'll get you out. The Vilna Gaon told him he would use the Shem HaMafurish, he would get him out, because he felt that this person was worthy of that type of Yeshua. The man said, no, this is what Hashem wants, this is what I agreed to, this is what I'm going to go through. He was tortured for days, weeks, months. Every imaginable pain was brought upon him. And finally, they saw they couldn't break him, and they decreed that he shall die by burning at the stake the next day. That night, the head galach, the inquisitor, the priest who was in charge of his torture, comes to the Ger Tzedek, tears in his eyes, and says, please, please, promise me that when you go to the next world, that you'll forgive me. I know that what I've done is wrong. I know that I've done something so evil. Promise me, please, promise me that you'll forgive me. The Ger Tzedek looked at this priest and said, forgive you? Let me give you a parable, a mashal. Once it was a king, and he's sitting on his throne, and a common man comes into the throne room, falls on his face and begs mercy. Please, your majesty, forgive me, forgive me, forgive me for what I've done wrong. The king says, stand up, stand up. Who are you? What? Your majesty, you don't remember? No. We were boys. We used to play together. Don't you remember? We used to play together, and sometimes I would wrestle you to the ground, and sometimes you would win, sometimes I would win. Your Majesty, forgive me for what I've done wrong. The king said, forgive you. We're little kids. We're playing. It didn't matter. That's how kids play. Says the Ger Tzedek to the priest, this is Kleinika. These are little things over here. You caused me pain. Didn't cause me pain. There's nothing to forgive because there's nothing that you've done. That's a man who so transcended the physical world, who so viewed everything as Hashem's involvement and recognized that everything that Hashem did for the good, he recognized this man as but a puppet, but a pawn, as but a powerless little thing, that there was no anger, no sense of revenge. He totally, totally was in a different world. I don't think we'll ever get there, but again, it's illustrative every once in a while to hear about that. It's illustrated to hear about a Rabbi Yochanan, because when we step away from the fray, we get a different perspective. More than anything, we see Hashem right there, and we recognize we're dependent on Hashem. We see Hashem bring the pain, and we say the words, Hashem, I know that you love me. I know that this is my good, whether I understand it or not, and we live a vastly different life. Hashem grant us the wisdom and the same puts into practice. Before we stop again, I just want to mention we have the book, the Shmuz on Bitochen, available. This is the first in the series of five on Bitochen. This one is Finding and Keeping Your Soulmate. It's Emunah Bitochen as it applies to Shidduchim and marriage, but it really it's 100 pages of straight Emunah Bitochen and the end, beginning and end applying to marriage. Please take a moment to look at it. And there are also some tapes in the back. Anyone who has questions, please feel free to come over and talk.
Zachary, very nice. Thank you. The question about why.
Yeah. I just want to shut this because that way.